Danny C. and Wesley L. coming straight from Dude Division on Outside the Loop Radio, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you, Benny. Enjoy Dude Division, a great street fest in Chicago. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is wonderful to be here with you today for show number 972. And what we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. We say hello to Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. And, you know, I've talked about this before, but sometimes it feels like every time you turn on the news, something else is falling apart in Washington. Whether it's the latest budget standoff, cuts to education, or slashing funding for the arts and humanities, it's like the federal government is on a mission to make life more complicated, not less. And for those of us who believe in the power of storytelling, history, and culture, it's pretty disheartening. But here in Chicago, we know how to be resilient. And despite it all, the humanities are alive and well. Just walk through a neighborhood like Pilsen or head over to the South Side. Go to Uptown, Hyde Park, or Little Village. You'll see street corners turned into stages, dance floors, classrooms, and community spaces. Our street festivals are the humanities. They're living, breathing proof that culture doesn't need permission to thrive. It just needs people who care. And you're here, so I know you care. On today's show, we've got the story of a very cool local doo-wop band from the 1960s called The Radiance. Then we fast forward a bit to hear some new music from Chicago guitarist AJ Rosales. And since we're thinking about what connects us, let's talk student loan debt today. It's something a lot of us are dealing with. But there's some good news. The state of Illinois is actually stepping up with some real relief. So yeah, while Congress bickers and budgets fall short, Chicago's out here throwing block parties, lifting up local voices. Illinois is trying to ease the financial load on us. Let that be louder than the national headlines for a bit. Because while those at the top might try to defund the things that help us and unite us, they can't defund our collective soul. Wait a minute, like the band Collective Soul? That's not what I'm talking about. Right, the collective soul. You know what I mean. I'm not playing any Collective Soul. I kind of like Collective Soul. They're not bad. On with the show. We all know that higher education isn't cheap. Student loan debt can be crushing for so many of us. Sometimes the very thought of that debt can deter people from pursuing higher education. Illinois residents collectively have a $63 billion debt burden. Claire Murphy is a journalist with the Illinois Answers Project, a nonprofit newsroom dedicated to investigative reporting on issues affecting us here in Illinois. And recently, she wrote about the state's student loan burden and explored initiatives like the Smart Buy program, which assists borrowers in managing debt while pursuing home ownership. Her work sheds light on the challenges and solutions surrounding student loan debt in Illinois, and we can check out the website, illinoisanswers.org. Claire Murphy is here with us today on Outside the Loop. Claire, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mike. It's great to be here.
Well, great to have you here. And so, okay, this is such a big issue, like I said, for so many of us. And so I said $63 billion with a B, $63 billion collectively. That's the debt burden that Illinois residents have when it comes to student loan debt. So when we look kind of big picture here, how does that stack up to other states?
Yeah. So, I mean, we know student loan debt is a national problem, right? We have over 1.7 $1 trillion when you're talking about collective federal and private student loans. But it's also really a crisis right here in Illinois. Illinois ranks as the seventh highest average state debt in the nation. Like you just said, Mike, it's $63 billion in collective student loan debt among borrowers. That's millions of Illinoisans that are currently living with the student loan debt. We've gone into the numbers, and it's about, it averages to about $39,000 per resident that has student loans. And, you know, this really becomes an issue when we're thinking about the long term, right? When it's coupled with one of the highest unemployment rates in the country, mm-hmm. the burden of these loans become even more substantial for borrowers. This is effectively delaying the purchase of a home, the decision to start a family, and other forms of progress towards economic advancement. People are seeing the price tag of these big decisions, like attending a graduate school or buying a home, and they just aren't moving forward because this debt is so burdensome.
Yeah, we'll talk about the whole issue of buying a house here in a minute here, but also just thinking about, you said that this could delay grad school or possibly eliminate going to grad school because of all this debt or the possibility of debt. But I mean, think about who's going to grad school. You have a lot of teachers, doctors, lawyers. We need these people to function in society.
Exactly. And I think there's a lot of one of the major problems is that there's just not an awareness about the options that are out there. Granted, there have been a lot of changes in terms of federal forgiveness options and recent changes and cuts within the federal government. And the future of these forgiveness programs remain uncertain based on everything that's been going on. But the most important thing that residents in Illinois need to understand is that there really are options available to them that can significantly lift the burden of their loans and help them, you know, move up in the world.
Let's talk about this Smart Buy program, because this is something that can help people. And I think you're right. Not a lot of people know about it. So this is really kind of central to what you were writing about on IllinoisAnswers.org. And this relates to student loan debt and buying that house. How does this Smart Buy program work?
Yeah, so the Smart Buy program is basically an initiative set up by the Illinois Housing Development Authority. And it was really created to help residents in Illinois significantly reduce their student loan debt. We know that student loans are one of the leading factors that is delaying home ownership among young adults. And actually, Illinois is projected to have the greatest decline in new homeowners in the next two decades. Hmm. It's expected to decrease by more than 7% by 2040. So that's really significant. So this Smart Buy program was proposed by the state, and it's aimed to alleviate this debt burden. And Smart Buy pays up to $40,000 in student loans and contributes up to $5,000 towards a down payment or closing costs when an Illinois resident purchases a house. There's no requirement in terms of where the home is or the census tract that it's in, so long as the house is in Illinois. However, in looking at the data, we do know that about 87% of homes purchased in the first round of this program and about 75% of homes purchased in the second round were located in the Chicago area. And then the state is funding this program through a $25 million capital bill fund that's originally from Governor Pritzker's 2019 Rebuild Illinois plan.
So in terms of who qualifies here, you said it's pretty wide open. So how do people even know about this or know where to go?
Yeah, so eligibility is probably one of the most important factors. Of course, this program does come with specific eligibility requirements. A buyer's full student loan debt must be paid off at the time of purchase. So if their debt exceeds $40,000 and Smart Buy only pays up to $40,000, they have to make up the difference at that of the money at the time of closing. And buyers also need to have a minimum credit score of 640 to qualify for the program and live in the home for at least 3 years after closing. And if they don't, they have to repay a portion of the debt assistance. So far, we know that about 631 loans have closed in the first round, and then 15 or so didn't make it through the three-year forgiveness period. And there's also income restrictions depending on where the house is. So like I said before, it can be anywhere in Illinois, but depending on the county, there are certain ranges that you have to qualify for. So for instance, instance, if you're a Chicago resident, you have to have a household income of less than $134,000 to qualify for the program. And the purchase price of the house has to be under $610,000.
Okay, so this is a government program, and I think that, like you're saying, not a lot of people know about this, but this is something that can really help folks in Illinois who are dealing with student loan debt and want to buy a house. Okay, it's a government program, and if we've been paying attention to the news here, we know that the government, especially at the federal level, is kind of in disarray in some parts. Mm-hmm. Lots of cuts going on. So what's the future of this Smart Buy program?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Mike. I think the long-term viability of Smart Buy definitely remains uncertain. Renewal for the program is really dependent on reallocation of state funding and an additional grant coming through the state. After the first round happened in late 2020, it closed in early 2021. And then the second round of the program opened last December and closed this past February. So it really is a popular program that people are jumping on because this is an amazing opportunity and it's a great, great way to alleviate some of that debt. But again, the funding is really based on a state grant and the renewal for that is uncertain. There's an uncertain timeline for if it's going to be renewed and if it can be a viable long-term option for tackling this $63 billion collective student loan debt that the state is facing. But I think the most important thing is to get the awareness out about it, because the more people that talk about it, the more people that are really getting the word out about how advantageous this program is for them and reducing their student loan debt, the more likely that the program will be renewed.
You also write about some other options that are out there. This public service loan forgiveness, this is something I know a lot of us probably don't know about, but pertains to folks that maybe work in the public sector or work for the government.
Yeah, so there's several federal options for student loan forgiveness. A majority of student loans are federal loans, although a portion of them are private loans as well. And there's several options that can really alleviate this debt burden. Public service loan forgiveness, the program is run through the federal student aid office. And this is probably one of the most popular student loan forgiveness programs. To qualify, you must work full time for a government body or select nonprofit organization. And if you do, this program will forgive the total remaining balance on all your federal student loan debt after 120 monthly payments determined by the qualifying plan that you have. So essentially, you only have to make payments on your loans for 10 years. And these payments are really reasonable because it's about 10% of your discretionary income. So that's, you know, maybe $40 or so dollars per month. It's really, really manageable. And it's estimated that nearly 30% of Illinois residents actually qualify for this program.
Wow. So look, we're talking about this issue of student debt, and we can read what you have written on IllinoisAnswers.org. It's a really extensive piece. But this is such a big issue. And, you know, obviously politics gets tangled up in this. We saw President Biden in his term try to have a bunch of student loan forgiveness. The courts kind of intervened with that. So, and just thinking about this, it's such a big problem because if you look at the numbers, that's a lot of money that so many folks need to pay back. And what we've seen is that it's just kind of altering the future of folks, like they choose to not pursue higher education, maybe change careers. So as we look at this student debt issue going forward, let's just keep it here in Illinois. I know we're talking a lot about budgets recently, but where are we headed here? Are there any sort of indications politically? Is there the political will to really continue these programs, expand these programs, and try to alleviate some of this burden that so many of us have?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Obviously, the Trump administration announced a couple months ago that student loan oversight, which is currently run through the Federal Student Aid Office, which is through the Department of Education, is going to be moved to the Small Business Administration. So that's a little bit chaotic. And then also, just there's been these drastic cuts to the U.S. Department of Education. It's effectively being cut in half. And so many million borrowers are actually enrolled in the former President Biden's SAVE program. program, which was at the time the lowest monthly income-driven repayment plan to date. And it's been stalled because of an injunction by the U.S. Appeals Court. So it's really all the people that were enrolled in SAVE have been placed in a period of forbearance where they don't know how much debt they have to pay off, but that debt is accruing interest. And the courts haven't reached a final decision for that. So they're waiting to hear back of that on that. And then on top of all that, earlier this month, the Federal Student Aid Office announced that it's going to resume its collection of many student loans, which have been paused since the whole COVID-19 pandemic. So borrowers have really been put through the ringer in terms of what options they have and how to best manage their debt. But the good news is that there are certain programs that are here to stay. There's a lot of chaos that's happening on the federal level, but you know, this PSLF program, Public Service Loan Forgiveness, is really secure and it's not going anywhere. And there's so many people that qualify for it that don't actually realize that they qualify for it. But it's really essential to get the awareness out about it, that there are federal options for loan forgiveness, but there are also, you know, these state options. A Smart Buy is a great opportunity for borrowers, but there's also the Illinois Student Assistance Commission agency that provides a couple of different programs for people working in the behavioral health space, human service jobs, teachers, nurses, and medical positions. They all qualify for these specific grants, and they just need to know what their options are. I think the future is uncertain in terms of politically how much is going to be reallocated for funding and what borrowers can do, but it's really essential that people know that it's an obstacle, but the most important thing to keep in mind is knowing what resources are out there, having a good plan and strategy for managing these loans, and knowing what you qualify for on a federal standpoint can really break down these payments and make them seem doable and manageable to pay off over time, because it's not something that's going to be solved overnight, right? This is going to be a you know, decade-long problem, and people have been experiencing this for as long as we can remember. But really the whole point of these loans are to lift people up and not bring them down. So knowing there are effective solutions is really a win in and of itself.
Well, we can get more information on IllinoisAnswers.org, and we can see what you wrote about this issue of confronting the student loan crisis in Illinois. Really an important topic. Claire Murphy is a journalist at the Illinois Answers Project. That's a nonprofit newsroom. And Claire, I really appreciate your time today and all of your reporting. It was great talking to you. Thanks for all of your reporting on this.
Thanks so much, Mike.
Let's get into some local music from AJ Rosales. His new album is called Phase Drift, and it is dropping on Friday, June 20th. His website is ajrosales.com, and AJ is with us here today on Outside the Loop. AJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, nice to have you here. So your music, and it sounds really nice. It's really great. I always ask artists this, you know, how do you kind of classify what you do? Because I think when I hear it, I mean, lots of acoustic guitar in there, and maybe it's kind of like acoustic forward music, but, you know, you've got some percussion and other things going on in there. How do you think of it, what you do?
Yeah, well, I think specifically for this album, it's definitely acoustic oriented, sort of like rock, I would call it. But I tend to do, you know, ballads and rock stuff sort of simultaneously on most of the releases that I've done. And this one is a little bit more stripped down in terms of the production, because I wanted to focus it more on, I guess, myself as a solo artist and the, you know, the way that I might come across more naturally at, you know, in a show in some way, because some of the tracks are more stripped away than others. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I think that, talking to artists, you know, when you have that kind of music, when you're stripping a lot of the other stuff out and you just have, I don't know, more bare bones or just maybe more sort of acoustic forward, You know, it's kind of at first to do that, it's a little bit jolting because there's nothing to fall back on. There's nothing to cover up what you're doing here. You're pretty much out in front. And I guess if you're playing live and you're doing that acoustically, that's also going to happen. But this is really, like you say, kind of stripped down, and it's more you doing your own thing, isn't it?
It is. But it's a little bit different because so like about two albums ago, I did the same thing where actually three albums ago, sorry, three albums ago, I did the same thing where it was more of like myself with a little bit extra production. But this is even more stripped back than that. I feel like it, in terms of the fact that it was actually like a live performance recording for the most part, and like edited pieces of live performances that were put together. And so I really wanted to focus on not only an acoustic and natural sound, but also like a natural performance as well. And that, so that was a major factor in how this album turned out, I think.
You mentioned a few albums ago, we should say that this is your sixth album, isn't it?
It is. Yeah.
Wow. Six albums. I mean, that's prolific. I think you're hitting prolific status at that point. But making this record again, it's called Phase Drift, and it's coming out Friday, June 20th. We could check out your website, ajrosales.com. This is pretty cool because you were doing this here in Chicago, but you know, you had some heavy hitters on this record, didn't you, in terms of the engineering and production?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I've known Doug McBride of Gravity Studios for quite a while. He did most of the releases that I've produced in the last two decades. And so we just have this, you know, this camaraderie that we've established previously that has sort of worked out for us. And on the last record, I had another heavy hitter, and that I actually convinced one of the mastering engineers at Abbey Road Studios to master that album, which was kind of a total shock to me because wow. it was like a surprise. I thought, well, who can I get to look at this record that would be kind of really impressive? And I asked them to take a look at it, and they said yes, which was a shock to me, but they did. And so for this record, I decided to be a little bit more thoughtful, and I picked out two mastering engineers from Sterling Sound in NYC. And those two engineers, you know, they basically specialize in the kind of music that I make, I think. And so I kind of like targeted them more specifically for this record.
That's just such a cool thing that you're able to work with these people. And Doug McBride, we should mention, at Gravity Studios, he's worked with Fall Out Boy. He's worked with Veruca Salt. So again, you're getting some of these, you know, big time people working on this. And in terms of, you know, the first single I know that you put out, Thunderclouds, tell us about this one, because this is kind of an example of you stripping things back, and it's very acoustic driven.
Yeah, well, actually, so that song to me is the reason why I put that single out first is because I wanted it to be sort of like an icebreaker for this record, because it is really about my solo performance. And so I think that particular track happens to capture that aspect really, really well. And I felt that it had a really great message to it as well. It's sort of like an uplifting kind of song at the very end of it. And so I wanted it to be, you know, a little stripped back, but then sort of like an introduction to the rest of the record, which was going to get more progressively visceral, so to speak. So, yeah. Could the sun still
studio doing something like this, when you have something that's more stripped back, you've got more acoustic guitar on it, you mentioned before that sometimes it's, you know, a little pieced together because you can do that in a studio, especially with technology today, but you yeah. wanted to capture kind of that live performance. So how do you strike that balance? Because it's really easy, you know, let's do it again, let's have another take, and you can just really Frankenstein monster this thing. But what is that process like for you in the studio?
Well, so normally, I mean, at least, well, let's say what I did for this record. So basically, I sat in front of a series of microphones and recorded about 8 or 9, maybe even 10 takes of each song. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of pieced them together from what I thought sounded best in each section, essentially. And so, I mean, that's the way that like a lot of classic records have been produced. You know, they sort of piece together live performances, and I wanted to do that too, so that it was, so it didn't sound too sterile, too overproduced, and too metronomic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that was my technique, to just like perform it a number of times. And I only did a maximum of like 9 or 10 takes for each song, because I had rehearsed every song for like almost 2 months continuously before I ever set foot in the studio. So I was really well prepared when I set foot in the studio, and it just sort of like flowed out. Each take flowed out. Most of them were really good, but then I just sort of picked like the exceptional sections from each take and pieced them together. So.
Yeah. And again, you could just stay there for as long as you want to keep paying. You know, I mean, you can really just tinker with all this stuff, but
the thing is, yeah. So we didn't actually do that though. Like I actually recorded all the bass tracks on this record in only 3 days.
Wow.
So I did 12 songs in 3 days. So it was really like a frying pan situation where, you know, I stuck myself in kind of like a do or die situation. And I needed to crank it out in 3 days, and that was it. So.
Wow. Yeah. Well, so you're doing the lyrics, you're singing, obviously, you're playing the guitar, but you're also playing piano. You got some percussion. So you're doing a few things on this record.
Yeah. And I'm also actually playing the bass on the record too. Like one of the things about this record, which is special to me, is that it started out as a complete solo record where I was going to just do these, you know, acoustic performances with me singing and playing. But then I decided that a couple of tracks needed some more texture. And I thought, well, you know, I've previously produced my records where I work with some session musicians, and I would chart out like bass parts and piano parts and kind of like, you know, like play with them and stuff like that. But I thought, well, this time I'm just going to try to play it myself, because I think I can do that. So I, you know, I charted out everything that I played on the record and ended up going to the studio and playing the bass, playing the piano, but the percussion was a little bit different. I had actually kind of like engineered that in my home studio and then sort of placed it in there. So,
well, the final product sounds great. The album is called Phase Drift from AJ Rosales, and it's coming out Friday, June 20th. We can check out the website, ajrosales.com. And of course, we'll link up to your website, AJ. Hey, you sound great, man. Thanks for talking to us today. Good luck going forward. I know you're not playing anything soon live, but you're going to get out there, I'm sure. And we'll be on the lookout for you. Yeah. So thanks so much for talking to us today.
Yeah. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Occasionally in the Chicago Reader, you will see the column, The Secret History of Chicago Music. It is hand-drawn by local musician, music historian, and artist Plastic Crime Wave. He's also known as Steve Krakow. This strip profiles a local musician or a band who never quite made it to the big time. So right now, let's dim those lights. Let's fire up the old hi-fi as we travel to Chicago's Ukrainian Village neighborhood and enter
The Secret History of Chicago Music.
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting The Radiance.
What's your choice? What's your choice? What's your choice?
Oh yeah. Once again, connecting across town to the lair of an apartment of Steve Krakow, also known as Plastic Crime Wave. He is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. And he is a local musician, artist, and just an all-around good guy. And he is profiling in the Reader this week a band called The Radiance. I like this sound. So, Steve, do we call this doo-wop? Is that the right classification here?
The thing that's so cool, I think, about The Radiance is there's sort of like this living history of the transition almost between like doo-wop and what we know as like soul and R&B music today, especially in a very Chicago sense with like the harmonies and the horns. It was this really natural transition, and it sort of happened in the early 60s, and I feel like The Radiance were were there for it, you know, and sort of led it into the new era.
Yes, and they do have a great sound. So I mentioned doo-wop, and you talk in your piece here about how Chicago has so many great soul music bands. So the difference between doo-wop, soul, R&B, can we parse that out in case people are wondering?
It's, you know, it's the thing is, it is a fine line. Like, say you think of a song like, you know, Duke of Earl, you know,
classic.
Classic. It has those elements, that doo-wop element, where you have like the bass vocal and the high vocal and these harmonies that are a very sort of specific thing. But then also at the same time, Gene Chandler is also, you know, who co-wrote that song and performed it, is also sort of acknowledged as one of the sort of like, you know, founding fathers of like soul in Chicago. So it's, you know, but it, you know, start, it's like up tempo and it's starting to groove a little bit. And, you know, that, so it's sort of like on the line. But yeah, doo-wop, you know, I always think of like Earth Angel and songs like that, where it's all about these sort of lush harmonies sort of coming together. It isn't necessarily about the groove or the backing band. And I feel like when soul came, when it sort of turned into proper soul music as we know it, and you know, again, guys would do it on street corners. It's true. You know, they would harmonize and sort of, you know, snap their fingers and, you know, you had this sort of doo-wop sound. Whereas I think soul and R&B was a little more dependent on the groove and the pocket and the instruments, but those harmonies were very important, you know. And yeah, another sort of important group would be like the Impressions, Curtis Mayfield's group. And you hear the early sides and they do sound like doo-wop. They're very, these sort of, you know, magical sort of ethereal harmonies, you know, and that's the focus. And then as time goes on, you know, it kind of turns into Curtis Mayfield, and there's these grooves and this sort of like social consciousness and all that as well, you know, that went along with it.
Right. I always think of doo-wop as, like you were saying, those harmonies, those lush vocals, the real high notes, the low notes. And so you get some of that with this band, The Radiance, out of Chicago. And you tell the story here, really forming this band, forming around lead singer Maurice McAllister. He's born in 1933, comes up here in Chicago. And this is kind of a story of, and we've seen this before, he gets older, he's in church, he's singing by basically taking the best singers in church and putting them together in a band.
Yeah, I thought that was an intro. You know, like a lot of these guys got their start in singing gospel in church, but not that many, you know, started their band by just kind of cherry picking the best people out of the choir. But, you know, that said, maybe they were performing at other churches. It was more gospel at first. And then within a year, you know, sort of McAllister sort of emerged as a writer and was writing more secular material and sort of going in a different direction, you know. But yeah, they, you know, they started in 1960. So that was again, that was sort of like a pivotal sort of time of change in the music.
Right. And The Radiance, they get a demo together and they're trying to go up and down Michigan Avenue, which back then was pretty much Record Row. And they go to Chess Records, but they don't get the time of day until there's some meat involved.
This is the most Chicago story. I mean, I think I literally LOL'd when I read this story, because it's so Chicago. And their manager, Lee Jackson, sounds like actually, you know, guy did a lot actually, but he also was a supervisor, you know, in music, but he was a supervisor at a meatpacking company. So that's so Chicago.
Yep.
And he ingratiated himself to Leonard Chess, the boss, aka one of my fellow tribe members, by like giving him some salamis and various in-case meats that I guess were sound like they were pretty good quality as well. So that got the demo, after basically Chess turned them away, you know, according to McAllister, like four or five times. That got the demo in their hands and got them in the studio, you know, a couple months later. So, you know, that's just a good manager right there, whether, you know, whether he's got the, you know, cold cuts that you are desire or not, you know, he did him a solid.
Oh, I love that story. That's such a great story. Okay, they get in there. That's after 64, and they're making more music, and they're making a bunch of tunes, and they're writing material. They've got some good stuff. There is this song I really like called Baby, You've Got It. And it is just smooth. And it is like a little Motown in there, some good harmonies. What a great tune.
Yeah. And, you know, that one wasn't even that successful. And I'm surprised. But, like, clearly, I knew that song already because this sort of UK mod soul band who were sort of contemporaries of like The Who and, you know, and those sort of like mod R&B bands called The Action covered it and actually do a great version of it. And I assume kind of was a cover because it kind of also has that cool Motown-y groove like you mentioned. But yeah, I did not even realize that was a Chicago band cover, you know, to go sort of full circle. Some singles success, and that was mostly the game in soul music. It wasn't really necessarily about albums, you know, but sadly it just couldn't quite sustain itself, especially when, you know, like the lineups were just changing a lot, you know.
Right, it seems like that. You talk about that in your piece in The Reader, that the Radiants were shuffling people out and in. And the Chess Brothers, they sell the label in 1969. Leonard Chess is going to die in October of that year. And, you know, they kind of move away from there. They do some stuff for Twinight Records. And but after that, really, like 1972, the Radiants are pretty much done, aren't they?
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, McAllister and another member of the band had left already. And we're sort of concurrently doing their own singles as Maurice and Mac with those final days of the Radiants. And McAllister went more into writing and production and stuff. But even the trail kind of runs cold after that. Like the Maurice and Mac did some really good singles that are considered classics, like of the soul genre now. And that's it. It just kind of ends in 72, the production work. And, you know, I consulted a lot of sources and that just kind of runs trail kind of goes cold after a bit on those guys, which is too bad, you know, because you hear these tunes and you're like, why wasn't this as big as anything else? You know, another guy they worked with, Gerald Sims, he co-wrote and worked on Higher and Higher by Jackie Wilson and Rescue Me by Fontella Bass, and it's like, this is as good as that stuff. You know, these songs are just as good and just as well produced and played and in the same pocket. And, you know, just, you know, sometimes you just shake your head. Why wasn't this so? And there's only been like a couple compilations. They are sort of beloved in the UK and Europe where they take soul music very seriously and divide into little categories like Northern Soul, and this one's a dance floor groover, and this one's for this. But, you know, they take it much more seriously than we do sometimes. And, you know, so there's been a couple compilations of their stuff, but not even one in recent years. Somebody's got to step up and get the Radiance name known and get us a nice, sweet double vinyl LP with a gatefold, you know?
I love that. That'd be great if we can do that. The Radiance, they
so
deserve
much
it.
Junk. They're making all this junk. Go, you know, to the record store on Record Store Day, and you're like, why are they repressing Bread's Greatest Hits? You know, like, what? Why? You know, what's going on here? It's like, no, do this. You know, do something. We need to collect like 30 singles by this band to get their catalog. You know, like,
that's
end of rant.
Well, let's go out on a high note here. A couple quick things we got to say very quickly here. Dusty Groove sponsoring you in The Reader, great local record store on Ashland and Division, basically in Wicker Park. So you love Dusty Groove. We all love Dusty Groove.
Indeed. And they will fill all your soul, doo-wop, funk, jazz, everything, all your needs.
I love that. And we've got to mention this. June 14th at the Hideout, 1354 West Wabansia in Chicago. You're having a special night there. And speaking of soul music, man, you got some stuff going on. Really quickly, just remind us what's going on June 14th at the Hideout that we can all go to.
If you want to see one of the true living legends of soul in Chicago, Ronaldo Domino, come to the Hideout for the late show. Earlier in the day, he will also be on some panels where we'll be discussing soul music with another legend, Jackie Ross. And yes, all this is for Secret History's 20th anniversary. So we will also have another panel on sort of like how it all started. We're one more talking to some of the 80s musicians and what that scene was kind of like in Chicago. And then, yeah, later in the night, Ronaldo will perform. And I'm telling you, if you dig Curtis Mayfield, Smokey Robinson, those kind of guys, he is the man. He is ageless. He is vital. He is writing new material. He looks amazing still. You really are going to do yourself a disservice if you, even if you don't catch him at this show, if you see the great Ronaldo Domino, a guy covered long ago in Secret History, playing around, go see him.
All right, Ronaldo Domino at the Hideout, June 14th. It's part of the Secret History of Chicago Music's 20th anniversary celebration. Earlier, some panel discussions. You can go to the website, hideoutchicago.com, for more information. Everyone go there June 14th. Steve Krakow is the author of The Secret History of Chicago Music Strip in the Chicago Reader and online at chicagoreader.com. Steve, as always, sir, I say thank you and stay radiant and do whoppy.
Back at ya.
You've been sneaking out the back door.
That just about does it. Outside the Loop show number 972 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. I appreciate you, and we all appreciate Bob Ferguson, who is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. I hope you have a wonderful week. I will talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.